Welcome to the Connected Leadership Podcast by Zentano, for forward-thinking leaders who want to lead with confidence, clarity, and impact. We bring you grounded wisdom, real stories from real leaders, conversations that leave you thinking differently, feeling inspired, and ready to act. Let's dive in. Hi, this is Dave from the Connected Leadership Podcast by Zentano. I hope you're enjoying your Easter break. As I said last week, we are re-releasing two episodes over the Easter period, in line with our recent Confidence in Leadership series. And these podcasts are on the topic of coaching and coaching skills. Last week, we dealt more with the mindset required to be a good coach's leader, and today's episode will dive into the practical skills needed. So I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you get lots of useful insights. Thank you. Welcome back to Unleash Your Impact, Unlock Others, and this Leadership Unscripted episode. The last time we were together, Rich and I, we explored the power of coaching and why it's a game changer for leadership. Today we get more practical. What does a coaching approach actually look like in action? What simple, effective tools can leaders use to develop their teams and build a culture of sustainable and optimal performance? And my guest, as always on these podcasts, is Rich Horton. Hello, Rich. How are you?
Hi, Dave. I'm good, thank you. It's nice to have the sun coming through the window for
a change.
It's
absolutely gorgeous, isn't it? And also to talk about one of our favourite subjects.
Yes, absolutely. Zentano is all about coaching. One of the reasons I came out of corporate life was to retrain to be a coach. So it's a great opportunity to talk about this.
Yeah, and I'd like to sort of kickstart this conversation, Rich, before we get into some of the real practical skills that if you're a leader using coaching skills that you can use, is to just think about coaching as a daily leadership practice and what that means from a mindset point of view. Mm-hmm. So we've talked on this podcast before about we need to move away in the world from this reliance on autocratic leadership and hierarchical leadership. Mm-hmm. We need to find a way, I think you and I call it relational intelligence, where we talk about a more collaborative way of leading and helping other people to do things for themselves, to take responsibility and accountability and empower them, basically. And probably make more decisions at a local level. Would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is a mindset shift. Now, for some people, that's going to be an easy shift. Some's going to be harder.
It is a mindset shift. And I think the danger in leadership, particularly if you've come from a technical background and you've been promoted through the ranks, often people that report to you are people perhaps with less experience than you in the field in which you're an expert.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So the danger for leaders is actually they come from a mindset, they think they know best, or they see people underperforming and they make all sorts of assumptions around, you know, this person's broken and they need fixing. But actually the coaching mindset is very different to that. So the coaching mindset comes from a perspective, actually you assume the person you're engaging with on one level has the answers already within them. Now, sometimes in some situations, they might not necessarily have the answers. We spoke about that in the last podcast, and there are appropriate times to tell people what to do. But what we're advocating in leadership is actually assume that the people you've recruited, you recruited them for a good reason. They have skills, talent, and ability, and your job is to unlock that.
Exactly. Well, hence the title of this podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so coming at it from a perspective that when you engage in a conversation with somebody, whether that's in a one-to-one or in a team meeting, actually what you're seeking to do is to draw out their potential, the answers from them, help them to learn for themselves. And the best leaders do that because if people find the answers for themselves, they're going to be more intrinsically motivated and engaged with the solution.
Yeah, and I think the other mindset shift that springs to mind from my perspective is picking up the point you made about we get really good at something. Now, we've got technical knowledge in an area, expertise in an area. We then get promoted and we lead a team and we still got all that expertise. But our job when we get promoted to lead a team isn't to just solve all their problems for them.
No.
And that is a mindset shift that a lot of people struggle to take, that mindset shift. Also, with the way the world is now, and we talked again about this, about being busy all the time, I think there's a mindset that says it's just quicker to give people the answer.
Yes.
So these are also mindset shifts that people will know they probably need to make, but struggle to make. Yeah. So I guess perhaps we can pick up today, well, how might we help people start to take the shift in that direction? So probably then another point to make is coaching isn't an event. It's a way of leading. You don't just do it as and when you've got time.
No.
And it doesn't, you don't do it as a one-off.
No, absolutely. And I think if you try to embed a coaching culture inside your organization and use that a coaching approach where you're assuming the other person has the answer. You're trying to help them come to the solution for themselves. Actually, a lot of activities, business activities, lend themselves to a coaching approach. So, for example, you've come from a sales background, Dave. I mean, how have you used a coaching approach when you're engaging with people in a sales context environment?
Yeah, I think you're right. So the approach has got to be what I would call a consultative selling approach.
Yes.
So that means you use coaching skills, because what you're doing is you're asking people about their challenges, their concerns, their needs, their wants, mm-hmm. the decisions they're trying to make, you know, exploring lots of things like that. Lots of very open questions to explore that, parking your assumptions mm-hmm. and actually trying to understand how you can help the person. That's essentially what coaching is.
Yes.
In that sort of sales context.
Yeah.
I also think there's other contexts where that approach also works.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I call a push-pull approach.
Yeah.
So consultative selling is what, rather than pushing the information and trying to sell a product to somebody without understanding them,
yep.
the pull approach is you try to pull the requirements out of them by good questions, good active listening. And that pull approach has its application in lots of business situations. So if people are engaging with key stakeholders inside the business, you know, rather than assuming you know the answer for the stakeholder, go and engage them in a pull conversation, in a coaching conversation, where you're listening, you're asking really good questions. You can use the same approach in meetings. So it's what we call the difference between the push and the pull approach.
Yeah, and go back to my point about relational intelligence, where leadership's got to become more collaborative. You know, we've got to break down silo mentality. We've got to communicate more effectively across an organization, mm-hmm. not just vertically up and down in within your team and the team yeah. above you, team below you, but across the whole of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Then a coaching skills, which is the same, you know, it helps you be more influential.
Yeah.
Are the same. It's the same thing. It's the same broad skill base used in a slightly different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So I guess, again, to demystify this a little bit more. So coaching doesn't have to be badged as a coaching conversation. It doesn't have to be, we're going to have a coaching chat today.
No.
Rich, does it? This can happen in all sorts of different contexts, one-to-ones, as you said, meetings. Yes, it can be used in performance reviews, but I'm guessing you agree with me here. It can be used in a 5-minute coffee conversation with somebody.
Yeah, yeah. It's what we call a coaching approach. So it's not an event, and it's a mindset, and it's an approach you take when you're engaging with people. So in other words, you're shifting from being the problem solver to, I guess a good word for that is like a thinking partner with somebody. So in other words, you're working with them and helping them to think stuff through. You're using that pull approach and helping them to find their own solutions.
Well, I quite like that phrase, a thinking partner, because that's exactly what you are doing. You are just helping somebody think through, probably in a deeper way, in a wider perspective way, mm-hmm. some of the issues and challenges that they face.
Yes, exactly.
But also helping them not just to think it through and articulate it, but to find some options and some solutions
yeah.
to solve it.
And I think the other thing I would say, actually, is a good coaching approach. If you create a coaching culture inside teams, there's a sense in what, you know, we've explored this before with in some of our previous podcasts. Actually, the best teams hold each other to account.
Yeah.
And the best way to hold each other to account is to coach people. You know, so if somebody is a little bit stuck, using a coaching approach to support, but also to challenge them in terms of their mindset, is a great way to build a really strong accountability culture inside your team.
Absolutely. If it was me and I was running a team inside an organization, I would teach all of my people in my team coaching skills.
Yes, yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly,
yeah. And get them coaching each other, like you say. It doesn't have to be me as the leader doing
all the
coaching.
No, definitely not.
So let's sort of break this down into some really important core skills. Mm-hmm. So to adopt a coaching approach, yes, you've got to get your mindset in the right place, but you also need to use some of the what we would call core coaching skills effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So let's have a chat about what we think are the core coaching skills. Now, I've got a list here. Perhaps we can pick them up one at a time. Active listening.
Yeah.
Mirroring and pacing.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful questions.
Yeah.
And also the power of silence.
Yes, the power of silence.
So let's pick those up one at a time, Rich. Active listening. What do we really mean by that? And more importantly, how do we do it effectively?
Yeah, so I think listening is one of the most underrated skills in leadership, I think. And I think a lot of leaders think that they listen well, but they're not really engaged in what I would call true active listening. Because listening, active listening, is not just about hearing the words and being like connected on a superficial level with what somebody is saying. So I sometimes, when I run leadership programs, put a slide up on the screen which shows a continuum between just hearing something
mm-hmm.
versus actually what we mean by active listening. So when we hear something, that can range from things like just being very passive, not listening,
mm-hmm.
to things like pretend listening, which is the next stage. So imagine when your kids come home from school, you're absolutely knackered, and they come bouncing into the house and they tell you all about their day. And you say, yes, dear, that sounds great. And really, you're not really engaged with them. You're just pretending to listen. And on one level, you know, that's maybe okay. But in the context of a work environment, if you're trying to engage with somebody and you're pretending to listen, people will know. So that, if you like, that's at the hearing end, just hearing stuff of this spectrum. But as we get more towards the listening end, this is where there's a bit of nuance, which I think is important to understand. I think we can engage in what we call bias projective listening or misunderstood listening.
So explain that for people.
So what I mean by that is we engage with the language they're using, but on a very superficial level. So we make assumptions around, you know, say they use the word stressed, for example.
Yeah.
We're overlay on top of the word stress. So they come to us and say, I'm feeling stressed. So we're overlay our interpretation of what that word means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what we call bias projective listening. Yeah. In other words, you're projecting your assumptions onto that. And that can be very frustrating for the person on the other end of that conversation, because what you're not doing is really trying to seek to understand what they're saying. You're just assuming you understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
So when we get more towards the active listening end, you're being really attentive, you're keying into some of the language that they're using, but you're starting to ask really good questions to explore what lies behind the language they're using. So you're asking questions to make sure you're not making assumptions about language. So you're looking for the sort of what I call language cues. You're really tuned into the person's physiology, their body language, tuned into their energy, their tone of voice. And you're using all of that data to then engage with them at a much deeper level. And if you do that, pay absolute attention, and people feel genuinely listened to, that can be just powerful in and of itself.
Yeah, and I know sometimes you say to me, when you've got a coaching client you're going to go and work with, often these days we do that on Teams. That's how our clients want to engage.
Yeah.
That you'll have that sort of 5 or 10 minutes before the coaching session starts, where you just want to be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
You just get your mind into a place where you can do that.
Yeah.
So you just park everything that's going on in your head, mm-hmm. everything that's going on in your life for that 5 or 10 minutes as a preparation, so that when you're in that conversation, you're present. And yes. I think that's one of the big challenges for people, not just inside the workplace, in life,
mm-hmm.
is we are so distracted. We are so bombarded with stuff. Yeah. It becomes overloading at times.
Yeah.
That can get in the way of listening.
Yeah, it can. I think the other point, just to pick up on what you're saying there, I think we cannot actively listen all of the time.
No.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
So, you know, to actively listen, we have to be present, really engaged, paying absolute attention, and be really intentional. So, you know, take a few moments before your one-to-ones with people just to put yourself in that right frame and just say, right, I'm now going to spend, you know, this hour, this half an hour with this person. I'm going to be really focused and really actively listen. After the meeting, you know, you can then freewheel. And, you know, because we can't actively listen all the time. So it has to be an intentional activity, I think.
You made an important point in what you were explaining just now about when you are doing this very active listening mm-hmm. skill, it's listening for the cues. Because sometimes it's not a long sentence that you're looking to spot. It could be just be one word.
Yes.
Sometimes when you're listening actively, it's just that one word that someone says that you need to pick up on and ask another question about.
Yeah,
I think
that's right.
It's very easy when we're distracted and we're not really listening properly mm-hmm. to miss the nuance of what people are telling you.
Yeah. I mean, language is so important, and spotting words, checking our assumptions around words. I think also when we're keyed into people's tone and body language. So what I recommend when we're keyed into somebody's body language, for example, is not to try to interpret that, just to notice it and then ask some questions to try and understand, you know.
Give us an example, Rich.
Why they're displaying that sort of body language.
I know you do this in your coaching sessions.
So just very simply. So this is maybe a little bit of a trite example. Someone's sat there with their arms folded.
Yeah.
And you've noticed that they're sat there with their arms folded. And you say, okay, every time I talk about this particular topic, I notice that you fold your arms.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's going on there for you?
Is that
telling us anything, or you're just cold,
yeah.
for example? You know, so you're checking assumptions rather than making interpretative judgments.
I suspect when you do that in your coaching sessions, and I've done that myself, is actually sometimes that people don't even know they're doing it.
No, that's right, yeah. And the whole point of coaching conversations is to bring a level of awareness to the person. You know, you'll be in their critical friend, you'll be in their mirror. So by feeding that back and giving them feedback around that, you're raising their levels of self-awareness.
Well, that leads me on to the next point I want to talk about, which is this concept of mirroring and pacing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, which we've talked about, that's about matching the tone and the energy that you have to the other person to build the conversation. So do you want to just expand on that for me? Yeah. Mirror and pacing. Why is it such an important skill and how do we do it?
Yeah. So when we mirror and pace, what that enables us to do is to connect on a deeper level to the person we're engaging with. So for example, let's take mirroring.
Mm-hmm.
So mirroring is a really good way of building rapport with somebody. So you can do mirroring on a number of different ways, and just be careful how you do this because it can come across as a little bit contrived and unnatural. If you're properly engaged with the person and in the right mindset and you're actively listening, hopefully the mirroring should come naturally.
Naturally, yeah.
But you can bring intentionality to this. So in other words, you pick up on their tone, their energy, the speed of their delivery, and you match that.
Yeah.
Okay, you mirror that back. Sometimes what you can do as well, if they're using particular phrases, particular terminology, particular words, mirror that back to them, and that would demonstrate to them that you're listening.
Okay. So an example of what this might mean for us, because we have a sort of natural style of talking, which is different. I'm probably faster and a bit louder than you in my natural style.
Yeah, yeah.
But engaging with you as a coachee, if I was coaching you, I would probably need to naturally slow down.
Yes, yeah.
And probably take the energy level down.
Yes, yeah.
Whereas for you, the opposite way around, it might be I need to take my energy level up and maybe speed up.
Yes,
that's what you're talking about there, isn't it? Actually,
yes, yeah.
Understanding your audience and understanding how you need to interact with that audience. Yeah. Yeah.
And something very powerful happens when you mirror somebody is it engages the mirror neurons in our brain, unconsciously usually, and it builds that deeper level of rapport. So when we match somebody, they will match us.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what's really powerful then, and you've got to be careful you don't use this as a manipulative tool, but what you then can do is what we call pacing. Mm. So in other words, what you can do then as a coach is you can subtly lead and shift the tone or the energy in the room.
Yeah.
So if somebody's tone is quite low level, you can match that tone and then you can gradually increase the pace. And they will then naturally, in other words, your pacing, they will naturally follow you. So there's a sense in which we can bring intentionality into this and use, if you like, yourself is a very powerful tool in terms of helping people.
I'm guessing if someone's listening to this thinking, well, how do I know when to up the pace or slow the pace? To a certain extent, there's an amount of intuition here.
You
just judge it.
Yeah, yeah, you would judge it. And I think really importantly, if you're manipulating somebody, manipulation means that you're trying to serve your own needs and your own ends. I think if you're deeply engaged with somebody, asking really good open questions, actively listening, and really trying to help them come to their own conclusion, your mirroring and your pacing then will serve those ends as opposed to serving your ends.
Well, that's a very important part of the mindset we were talking about, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Coaching
exactly.
is a servant-orientated leadership
skill. It is, exactly.
Skill, yeah. Exactly. Well, and you've alluded to my next question, really, which is around, okay, we talked at the beginning of this segment about the skill of powerful questions.
Yes, yeah? Yes.
And I think what we mean there is moving away from this assumptive approach where we just ask lots of closed questions to prove that the answer we've got in our brain is the right one.
Yeah, yeah.
To a skill where we just naturally stay in that open question mode,
yes.
where we're just being curious, we're just exploring, we're not laying our own bias, our own assumption on top of it. Not as easy to do as people think it is, because we've proved this in countless workshops over the years, haven't we, where people just go straight into closed questions all the time.
Yeah, the reason we ask closed questions is because probably we think we know the answer, and then we're just asking questions to direct people in the direction that we think they should be going in. So asking open questions actually leaves the field open, if you like, for them to explore. So asking really good open questions without them being leading is a real skill. And as a leader, if you can bring some self-awareness to the questions you're asking people and start to notice, you will probably notice, and even I do it, that you know, I've been a coach for many, many years, coached you know, probably thousands of people, thousands of hours of coaching. And I still spot myself sometimes asking leading questions masked as an open question.
You mean you're not perfect, Rich?
No, no, definitely not perfect.
It's hard to believe. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And you know, no one's ever going to be perfect.
No, it's not.
It's not about being perfect, is it?
Yeah.
But I think going back to, from a practical standpoint, what I said earlier on, if you are listening to somebody and you're spotting the cues that they're giving you,
yes,
the clues to go deeper,
yeah,
then you know what the next question is you're going to ask.
Yeah, yeah. So, for example, going back to that point I was saying earlier, when somebody uses the word stress.
Yeah.
A really good open question is, what does stress mean to you?
Yeah, exactly.
What does the word stress mean to you? That's a really good sort of open question. So there are two levels around asking really good questions. There's going from closed to open questions. So, you know, what, where, how, why, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what we call the level one of asking really good questions. The level two, the advanced level of asking really good questions, is what I would call asking generative questions.
So go and explain that for people.
So, for example, have you heard of Socrates?
I have, the
famous philosopher.
Oh, I thought the Brazilian footballer. Okay.
Yes. <Yeah. laughs> No, not the Brazilian footballer. Well, I don't know. He might have been a philosopher as well. Anyway, Socrates was really interesting, because he was an incredibly intelligent person, huge amount of wisdom, but he used to work with people, rather than telling them the answer, he had this approach which is called Socratic questioning.
Yeah.
In other words, when they're exploring a philosophical concept, he would just simply ask question after question after question to stimulate the learning in the other person. It's what's called generative questions.
Yeah, okay.
In other words, by asking really good questions, you seek to, you know, prime the person to learn and get the answer for themselves. So, for example, a good generative question will clarify meaning.
So what does stress mean to you?
What exactly do you mean by that? So that clarifies meaning. It will look at assumptions and challenge untested beliefs or biases.
Yeah.
So in other words, in this situation, what assumptions are you making about this particular situation?
Yeah.
What beliefs maybe are helping or not helping you in this? So helping people to challenge their assumptions. I think really good questions can help people understand a situation from different perspectives. So you could say, okay, so in that situation, the person on the other side of the table, when you're having that conversation with them, what do you think they were thinking?
Yeah.
So getting them to explore things from a different perspective. I think another really good generative question is getting people to assess the evidence and the reasoning behind their behaviour or their particular point of view. So in other words, really good generative question. Okay, so what evidence supports your view that that person is behaving in that way?
Yeah.
Okay. And then a final sort of really good sort of generative question is actually you redirect people towards action. So in other words, you're not giving them the solution. So, you know, based on what we've just said in this conversation, what's going to be your next step in terms of the actions you're going to take?
Well, I think that's one of the challenges that people that start to adopt a coaching approach, that they get to the point so they can explore what somebody wants to achieve. They can explore kind of where they are now. And we'll come to a process for that in a minute. But when they get to the point where they're doing the talk solution, they go, right, I'll tell you what, I'll give you this. I'll give you the solution.
Exactly. Yeah.
But actually, no, that's the last thing you do.
Yeah.
Because actually in a coaching conversation, it's not your solution.
Yeah. So I've created, or Zentano has created an acronym for these generative questions I call clear questions.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, C, clarify meaning. L, look at assumptions. E, explore perspectives. A, assess evidence and reasoning. And R, redirect to action. So ask them really good, clear questions, in inverted commas.
It's almost like you know what you're talking about here. It's just you're a genius. Maybe. So I guess the other skill that I think you're right, asking powerful, open-ended questions is a real skill. And it's not something that's easy to do or as easy as people think it is. Mm-hmm. And you need to practice it because, as you said, after all these years and all these thousands of hours of coaching, you can still fall into bad habits.
Yeah.
So it's a practice will make us better at this.
Mm-hmm.
But also the other thing to do when you ask a really powerful question is shut up.
Yes.
So the power of silence, give people space to think before you jump back in, either with another question or with some observation. So talk about the power of silence. How often do you use that? How do you use it?
Yeah. I think we need to touch on first, actually, the reason why people are frightened of silence. Because in the workshops, leadership workshops that we run, it's really interesting that when we set up some coaching activities in workshops, often people are worried about the silence and they jump in immediately. And that's usually an anxiety around they think they have to solve the problem for the person.
Mm.
Let go and let the person solve the problem for themselves. So that's that mindset thing that we were talking about earlier. So, you know, get used to the fact that silence can be really powerful, and also to understand that your experience of the silence, which might seem really long, and really drawn out, actually to the other person, they're processing probably. They're thinking stuff through. And if you try to jump in at that point, you're interfering with their processing. You're interfering with their learning. So to understand that if you jump in to silence, you're interfering with their processing. That's really important.
We've probably all experienced that. I mean, I certainly know I've been to meetings or events or even in a one-to-one conversation sometimes, and someone is constantly talking at you and they're not giving you the space to think. And they might have asked, they might have asked you a really good question.
Yes,
you think,
yeah,
I just want to think that through. And then you keep talking at me. You keep actually, that's really frustrating and annoying.
It's really frustrating and annoying.
Yeah.
So becoming comfortable with silence is really powerful, I think. Yeah, so in the workshop sometimes, we give people, delegates, the opportunity to see me coaching somebody live.
Yep.
If there's a good level of trust in the room, we'll ask somebody to volunteer. And feedback we regularly get when people observe me coaching is, wow, there's a lot of silence in that. You didn't say much at all.
Mm-hmm.
You ask a couple of questions and then, you know, you give people the opportunity to think and talk. And actually, the experience of the silence, when we ask the person who's been coached, so how did you experience that long bit of silence? They usually say, well, I was just thinking about stuff and I didn't notice.
Didn't
notice the silence. So it's to understand actually how the other person experiences the silence is very different from how you, as the person leading the conversation, experiences the silence.
Yeah. And go back to that mindset. It's not about you, it's about them.
It's exactly.
That's really important.
That's a really good point.
The experience that you're trying to create here is not your experience, it's theirs.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's move this on then. So we've talked about these really important core skills that all of them take practice. You won't master them overnight. It'll take time, but you'll get better and better the more you do it. So active listening, mirroring and pacing, powerful questions, and the power of silence. So Rich, we've talked about those really important core skills. Let's now talk about a framework that people can use to coach people in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the most famous models is the GROW model, or as we call it, the T-GROW model. Introduced by a guy called John Whitmore, in a book called Coaching Performance, which I know you've read, I've had to read as well as part of my studies in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell me a little bit from your perspective why you think it's such a good model.
Okay. It's a very simple model, very straightforward model, and it's not a model for every situation. But if you've got a more formal coaching conversation, it's a really good model to use. You can use it informally as a broad framework for shaping a conversation. I think the reason the model works really well and has had longevity is because it stops you from going straight to solution mode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you think about the T-GROW model, T stands for topic, then it's goal, reality, options, and way forward, the final part of that model, that final step, if you like, that's the solution bit and what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So before you get anywhere close to coming to a solution, there's a whole set of elements in the conversation to touch on before you get anywhere close to a solution.
Yeah.
So in other words, what it does, it stops you going into tell mode and stops you going into solution mode and puts a very simple framework in place to enable you to ask generative questions for each of those sections that helps the other person explore the issue before you get anywhere close to solutions.
So let's just give people some context to help them understand how to use this. Let's take an obvious one. We're going to do some kind of performance review, whether it's an informal review or a formal review. Now, you might say to somebody, in terms of the topic for the conversation, which that's the first part of this T-GROW model topic, somebody might come to that conversation with a specific thing they want to talk about.
They might not.
It might be you're asking a question that is, what would you like to talk about today? And they don't really know.
Yeah.
But therefore, you can just ask another question.
Yeah. So you could ask at this part of the model, so the topic element of the conversation, it's the first engagement, if you like.
Yeah.
What are you struggling with right now? You know, in terms of the role that you're in, what's your biggest challenge that you'd like to talk through with me?
Yeah.
For example. So that, if you like, is the sort of question you'd ask, you know, what's the topic that we're going to be talking about today? And I think it's really important not to move on too quickly from topic to goal. We'll come to goal in a minute. Because usually the presenting issue is not the real issue.
No.
So, you know, for example, you know, when somebody says, well, I'm feeling a bit stressed at the moment, as we said earlier, you can overlay all sorts of assumptions over that. So in this topic part of the conversation, you know, you can start to ask questions to uncover what's the real issue.
Yeah, and it may not be where you're struggling. I'm thinking back to my days as a sales manager when I had these types of conversations, and I may have said to somebody, you know, using this model, where should we focus the conversation? This is your time. We've got an hour together. Yeah, yeah. This is your time to explore your performance. Where should we start the focus? It might be they want to talk about what's really working well and why. So it can be a conversation about the stuff that's really working, mm-hmm. as well as the stuff that maybe isn't working. But what you want to do, you really want to get a sense of where they want to focus the conversation, mm-hmm. and probably importantly, why.
Yes.
I think the bit that often gets forgotten is, well, why is that topic important?
Exactly. So you can ask questions like, you know, what's the key challenge you're trying to explore today? What assumptions might you be making about this particular situation? You know, what might somebody else do in your situation around this problem? You know, there's a whole set of questions you can ask to unpack the topic before you then get into, okay, in this conversation, based on that's what we're going to talk about, what specifically do you want to achieve from this conversation? You know, if there are no constraints in this situation, you know, what would your ideal outcome be? So in other words, you're immediately asking questions to put them in a solutions focused sort of frame of mind. So rather than jumping straight to solution, ask them, actually, what's the outcome you want from this conversation? So that's the goal.
And actually, you don't want to rush this part of the conversation, do you? Because you want them to paint a picture for you is, what is that desired outcome? How will they know they've got to that desired outcome? Yeah. I think tendency can be to rush.
Yes, yeah.
This part of the conversation. It might even be questions like, well, actually, you've got this bigger aspirational goal, mm-hmm. but actually there needs to be some milestones on the way. Well, what are those milestones?
Yes, yeah.
So there's a whole, again, like you said, a whole raft of questions you can ask here. Yes. All open questions, all generative questions that get people to explore their desired outcome. Okay.
So you've unpacked the topic. You've agreed with them, actually, from this conversation, this is the goal for this particular conversation. Then you start to talk about and explore what is the reality. That's the R bit of the T grow model.
Yeah.
Reality. So you can ask questions like, so where are you now in relation to your goal? So this is mm-hmm. what you want to get out mm-hmm. of this conversation, the goal we just talked about. Where are you now?
Yeah.
What assumptions are you making about this challenge? Talk to me a little bit more about this situation. If somebody else was looking at you, what would they say about the situation that you find yourself in? So you're asking all sorts of questions to help them explore the context of the challenge that they're facing.
And go deep. You know, what's working for you?
Yeah.
And why? What's not working? Yeah. Why? Don't be afraid to go deep. I think that's another mistake people make, is they, again, try and rush this part of the conversation, when actually it's really important to explore.
Yeah. Explore. What's the data? What's the evidence? What's working well in this situation? What's not working well? So in other words, you're getting them to explore the issue much more deeply. Now, what you might find when you explore the reality more deeply is the focus of the conversation then starts to change. Absolutely. And actually, you can maybe go back to the goal element of the conversation and, you know, refashion the goal based on the deeper conversation you've had around the reality.
Well, I was going to make a point actually about that, because it's happened to me and I'm sure it's happened to you, is when you do that reality exploration really well, sometimes people will say things like, "Oh, I hadn't really thought of that."
Yeah,
so you get some kind of light bulb moment, insight that actually is really powerful for them.
Yeah. So it goes back to the comment I made earlier. Often the presenting issue is not the issue.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so when you think you've explored the reality well, you've got a really good understanding of it, you've aligned that to the goal that they've said they mm-hmm. want to achieve. Yeah. But, and you're right, you might, when you explore that reality, have to go back and reset the goal or mm-hmm. rediscuss the goal. But when you've done that well, the O in the model is options, i.e. what are we going to do to move ourselves from your reality towards your goal?
Yeah. So this is basically working with them as their thinking partner. So it's that concept we were talking about earlier, to help them generate possible solutions to the outcome. So you can ask questions like, you know, what possible ways could you approach this? What mental barriers might be getting in the way of you seeing other options? What would you do if there are no constraints? That's a really good generative question. You know, so asking them to think beyond their current, what they perceive to be constraints of the situation. What's worked with you in similar situations? So there might be stuff you've done before that you connect back to. So in that situation, what did you do that you could apply to this situation?
Or what have you seen other people do?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's really good.
Sometimes And again, I'm sure this has happened to you. It's certainly happened to me. You've had a really good conversation. They've opened up. They've told you lots of stuff. But you get to this part of the conversation and they say, do you know what? I don't really know. They get a bit stuck.
Yeah.
Now, is that because they're expecting you to give them the solution, which you mustn't do at this point?
Maybe.
Or is it because they're genuinely stuck?
Yeah.
And if they get genuinely stuck, what would we do? What do we do then?
So in some occasions, and particularly in the O part of the model, if you have some knowledge or experience that you think is pertinent to the conversation that you're having, sometimes it's appropriate to share that with the person. But it's important that you don't disempower them by sharing your perspective and your solution. So sometimes at this particular point in a conversation, I might say to somebody, well, did you want me to share my experience from a similar situation? Is that going to be helpful for you? So sometimes I'll ask permission to do that, but you're doing it in a way that doesn't disempower them. So make it more of a suggestion than a solution.
I think, and this is where I go back to your point about the nuance of words.
Yes.
Don't say, can I offer you an opinion? Say, can I offer you an observation?
Yes.
Which is a slightly different nuance.
It is. That's good. I like that.
Yeah. Because actually most people say, yeah, that's actually fine. And that observation that you offer them might just be the thing that opens them to the next bit. So we should explore options. We should explore their options, not your options, and as many as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's get as many solutions to the issue that they can think of. Mm-hmm. Probably get them to sort of rank them a bit. Or
and say which is their preferred.
And why.
Preferred option and why. Yeah.
I love the question about if you couldn't fail, which one would you choose?
Yeah,
that's
a great
question. Yeah. But ultimately, as you said, coaching is an action-orientated skill set. It's not just a cozy chat.
Yes.
So the W bit, the way forward, i.e. what will they commit to doing, is absolutely vitally important.
Yeah. So this is about turning insights. So hopefully by going through the T, the G, the R and the O, that are gaining some insight, and you turn that insight or help them turn the insight into what are the next steps and build some accountability into the process. So, for example, in this part of the conversation, you can say things like, what's the first small step you can take?
Yeah.
I think it's really good to break things down into small steps. That's the subject for another podcast. But small steps is good. You can get people to explore actually what's stopping you from taking this particular action, because this is the way forward bit. So you're also exploring their motivation for going forward and how committed are they to taking this action. So checking their assumptions, checking the perceived barriers around taking these actions is important. You can say what support you need.
Yeah,
actually,
absolutely.
From me as a leader and a manager to help you make this happen. What accountability can we build in that's going to help you sort of stay on track with this? What specific milestones do you need to put in place to make sure you keep track of the progress? Or if they don't want you to hold them to account, it depends on the context, but you can say, okay, so what are you going to do to hold yourself to account?
Yeah, and I know a lot of coaches also like to use a skill of what we would call scaling. So you'd ask them a question, okay, well, on a scale of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, how committed are you to this action that you've identified?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you've got to be careful with that, because if they say, well, I'm sort of 6 out of 10, and you think, oh, that doesn't sound very good. I was hoping you'd say an 8.
Yeah.
But hang on a minute, with that person might score nothing very high ever.
Yeah.
So it's not about what you think the rating should be.
No.
And the question is, if they do say 6 out of 10, don't think to yourself, well, that should be a 7 or an 8, really.
Mm.
The question would be, that's interesting. What would make it a 7?
What would make it a 7?
Yeah. Don't overlay your bias, your judgment, your assumption on any of these questions.
Yeah.
Easier said than done, I get, but it's really important, isn't it?
So one final thing just to say about the TIGRO model, I think is really important, is not to treat TIGRO, TIGROW. So you've got each different elements of a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Don't treat it as a rigid process.
No.
Okay.
No.
So treat it as a loose framework for having a conversation with somebody that will stop you going into solutions mode and pushes the onus on them coming to the solution for themselves. So it's a great framework just to stop you jumping in.
It's also important to say, I think, that it might take more than one conversation. So you might have an hour and you might only get to goal and reality and actually not have time for anything else.
Yeah,
but that's okay because you can reconvene. And sometimes they need the thinking time. Someone like you who likes to reflect a lot, you might actually say, give me a bit of space. I'd like to reflect on what we said. So that's okay. Coaching conversation doesn't have to be in one take.
No. Yeah, the other thing I was going to say that's really important about this model, practice with it.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, people should not know that you're using TIGRO as a model for the conversation.
No.
It should sound like a natural compensation. So just use TIGRO, if you like, as a loose framework that sits in the back of your mind, that's gently just guiding you through a process of coaching.
Yeah, and also I guess another application of this is for those of you out there who are looking to do some reflective learning on your own, you can TIGRO with yourself.
Yes, you can.
You can use it as a reflective learning model with yourself, can't you, as well? Yeah. So let's talk about, just to sort of move towards closing down this podcast, about overcoming some of the common challenges that people have when they're trying to do this. So, for example, well, I don't have all the answers. I think we maybe have already answered this, but it isn't about having the answers. It's not about giving advice, is it?
No, that's right.
What about balancing coaching with the more directive forms of leadership? So when do I guide and when do I step back and just purely ask questions? Mm-hmm. Maybe you could just briefly give us your thoughts on that, Rich.
Yeah, so there are two elements to this, two continuums, if you like, that map directly onto our connected leadership model, actually.
Yeah.
So there's a push-pull thing.
Yeah.
So there are times to push information, to tell people what to do. And there are times where we pull and use that coaching approach. And you know, if somebody genuinely does not know the answer, or they lack the experience or the knowledge, you know, sometimes there's times just to tell.
Yeah.
In an emergency or in a crisis, there might be just time just to tell.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a health and safety issue, mm-hmm. maybe it's time, if people are putting themselves into danger, and then there's a time to tell. But even with a health and safety issue, actually, you're usually better off having a coaching conversation so people understand, you know, what the health and safety issue is, so they come to the answer, the conclusion for themselves. So that's the push-pull element, which aligns to the north-south axis of our connected leadership model. The other two elements are, do you support or do you challenge somebody?
Mm-hmm.
So the supportive side is where you're asking open questions, you're using a lot of active listening, and you create a supportive environment where people feel they've been listened to and they're not judged. But there's times where you need to balance that with challenging somebody. So in other words, going in and saying, okay, so from my perspective, what I'm seeing is this, and can you think about this in a different way? So you're balancing support and challenge, and you're balancing push and pull, and connected leadership is about those four elements.
And it's important to say, I think, that some people can take more challenge than others. Some people want more challenge than others.
Exactly.
So you have to know your audience. You have to know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
Maybe you should check in with them. You know, how challenging would you like my questioning to be?
Yeah.
Because some people want it that way.
Yes, yeah.
Others might say to you, well, don't be too brutal with me. But I think it's important to try and use your intuition to balance that.
Yeah, indeed.
The other thing to say about this TIGRO model and coaching in general is it's not a one-to-one thing, Jess. We can coach our teams. We can use this TIGRO model and all these skills to coach teams in a team meeting, for example.
Exactly.
So let's just wrap this up then, Rich. Some closing takeaway messages.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your takeaways for people listening to this?
I think number one, shut up and listen. Shut up and listen. And really listen. So pay absolute attention. As Stephen Covey said, seek first to understand, then be understood.
Yeah. Anything else?
So really develop the skill around asking generative questions and practice asking really good generative open questions. And just practice using the TIGRO model as a loose framework in the back of your mind. Stop yourself. Notice when you're getting into solutions mode.
And that would be my takeaway for people from this. It goes back to the beginning of our conversation, is have a little bit of a thought around your mindset. Because if you want to adopt a coaching approach,
mm-hmm.
are you sure you've got your mindset in the right place to do that and do that well?
Yes.
So if you are the sort of person, you know you're the sort of person that does tend to give people the solution, you can mm-hmm. help yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to stop yourself doing that?
Yes.
If you're not sure how people perceive you, go and get some feedback.
Yeah.
Do I tend to give people too many solutions? Mm. You need to understand yourself to be good at coaching.
Yeah. I think building on that, really important, is the danger is seeing coaching as a skills-based activity. Sure, there are skills, active listening, asking good generative questions, using the TIGRO model. There's skills you can develop. But fundamentally, if your mindset is not in the right place, you're going to undermine those skills. So for example, if your mindset's in the wrong place, you think you're asking a good open question, but actually, in reality, you're asking a subtle leading question.
You are. And I think the mindset bit is so important, because the way leadership is progressing in the world and what the world needs in the years ahead
mm-hmm.
is people with really good coaching skills.
Yes, yes.
So if you can get yourself into that right mindset and develop some of these skills we've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
you will be equipping yourself to be a leader that the world needs for the future.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's quite a nice positive way, I think, to end this conversation. So, Rich, thank you for your time, as always.
Thank you.
Love talking about a topic like this. We have a newsletter coming out that accompanies this podcast with a bit more detail in it, some top tips, and maybe a couple of questions for you to ponder. And if you're out there thinking, I really like these last two podcasts, I want to get a more coaching-orientated approach into my business, come and talk to us. We've got programs built around helping you do that. So please come and talk to us. Okay, Rich, thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Goodbye.
Bye.
If today's episode has struck a chord, please share it with someone that you might know that might need to hear it. Please give us a 5-star rating on your podcast channel, because this really helps us to get reach and inspire more leaders. Every week we send out a newsletter called Foresight, containing top tips from each episode. There's also a book recommendation, a thought to reflect on, and some practical takeaways that you can apply in your day-to-day life. Visit zentanogroup.com/podcast and add your name to our mailing list. But for today, thank you for listening.